Company 1025, 106 for the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game National Studios on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. So, you know I don't like conference media days very much. I think they're kind of foolish. Again, it's a big press conference, and the commissioner talks, and then all the coaches talk, and then there's, you know, a player or two that might be interesting, and all, you know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry from, you know, Raging Cajun Radio down in Louisiana goes out there, and it's like, okay, talk about a barnyard musical. But that's okay. I at least kind of understand their purpose. They're to get the message out there. And the SEC does their media days as well as anybody. The SEC basically dictates when they go. We go when nothing's going on in sports. We go before the NFL comes back for training camp. We go while baseball is on hiatus with the All-Star game. That's when we go. No basketball, no hockey, nothing. Now, Caitlin Clark might be something we have to worry about, but other than that, it's all our real estate all the time. The Big Ten has recently posed a threat to the SEC. The SEC and the Big Ten, as far as deciding what the future of the college football playoff is technically on equal footing. They are the two that decide. The Big Ten, shockingly, has a television contract in which they make more money on a yearly basis than the SEC does. The Big Ten has won the last two national championships. There's actually some thought that the SEC was starting to lose ground atop their perch of kings of college football. I never believed that. But some people were starting to think that. Chris Childers, and I love Childers, but Chris Childers on SiriusXM College Sports Radio, he told me at CMA Fest that Greg Sankey knows he's losing his power and the Big Ten is taking over. That the Big Ten has more rich boosters than the SEC does. I also am not sure I totally believe that, but okay. So the Big Ten had their conference media days this week. Did you notice? And that's part of what makes the Big Ten conference and what their media show was this week, and they turned it into a complete and total clown show. The commissioner, for instance, will not back down from his wildly unpopular 4-4-2-2 model that the SEC, the one with the real vote, has said no to. The one that Notre Dame has said not interested. The one that the ACC and the Big 12 have said pass. They still double and triple down. And all the coaches got up there and complained about how the SEC only plays 8 conference games and they have to play 9 conference games and it's not fair. And I guess that might be a legitimate gripe, but that's not a gripe that anybody really cares about. That is not a gripe that any fan at home, unless you're just a big Penn State lover, is sitting there saying, yeah, I really care that the SEC plays 8 games and the Big Ten plays 9 games. And I thought the clown show of a media day performance ended perfectly with James Franklin openly complaining about the conference's decision to have their media days in Vegas and how it does not compare at all to the SEC. Here's what James Franklin had to say.
A lot of our beat writers did not come to this because they couldn't afford to get out here. And the majority of our teams are near Chicago, where this used to always be. The majority of our teams are near Indianapolis, where this used to be. And it creates a different environment. I walk around the lobby. I don't see any signage. I don't see anything for the Big Ten. I don't see people getting autographs. It's a different vibe and it's a different feeling. I think that other conference, when they have their meetings, there's essentially a press conference every single day at the end of the meetings. It keeps people talking about that conference at a time of the year and makes them relevant. We're not doing that. We need to be talking about the Big Ten and our programs and the things that we have done and making it as accessible to everybody as we possibly can and connecting with the fans. And don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I think Vegas is a special place, and I think they run events as well as anybody. But it's a different feeling.
I'm not crapping on Vegas. I want you to know my angst is 10. That's what Franklin just said. The other conference, they got people getting autographs at media days. The other conference, they've got press conferences and the messages getting out. And our media days, we don't even have signage in the lobby. What a clown show, James Franklin is saying. And I'm going to tell you what my big takeaway from the two conference media days are. Again, of the two conferences that hold power in college football. One is organized. One is prepared. One articulates their points and is confident in their decisions and positions. And the other conference, they're careless. They're sloppy. They don't have any real semblance of order behind the curtain. That's why I brought up James Franklin's comments laying into the Big Ten's decision to hold media days in Vegas. Because just going after the conference the way that Franklin did. Again, he made sure, hey, I'm not saying anything about Vegas. Vegas does it great. They did great. They do great when it comes to events and everything. I'm talking about us. We stink. The media appeal of their media days, the visibility of their conference in that particular city, James Franklin basically said, we're stupid for doing this. And who is that really a shot at? Again, he wants you to know it's not a shot at the city of Vegas. It's a shot at the league. It's a shot at the commissioner. And not one SEC coach would dare say something like that at SEC media days because they know, oh, we're going to get it from Greg Sankey if we do that. And that's the differences between the conference. Greg Sankey's got the respect of his coaches. He's got the respect of his chancellors, of his presidents. He's got the respect of the TV partners he deals with. I'm not even the biggest Greg Sankey fan in the world, and he's got my respect. There is a reason that the Big Ten is so enamored with the 4-4-2-2 playoff model, and it's because their TV contracts, which, again, they make a lot of money from, are really, really bad at the end of the day for CBS and NBC. And they know that at some point, CBS and NBC are both going to stop paying $350 million each for a combined six of the top 50 games. Last year, of the top 50 college football games on TV, CBS and NBC, for a combined $700 million, had six of the top 50 games. Meanwhile, ABC, who pays $300 million, so less than half of what CBS and NBC are paying for six of the top 50, ESPN, ABC, had 34. So Tony Petitti, the commissioner of the Big Ten, has the TV networks mad at him, coaches mad at him, and who knows what those chancellors and presidents think. And like a mobster trying to make his bones, Petitti does not have any major wins in his column. He didn't pull USC and UCLA to the Big Ten. Kevin Warren did that. He didn't negotiate their mega TV deals. Kevin Warren did. And by the way, Kevin Warren did it haphazardly, where the Big Ten had to write a check and give money back to Fox because they gave away things they didn't have. Careless. Sloppy. I didn't need Pat Forty to report the other day that a source said that Tony Petitti has, quote, lost the room and was, quote, way out over his skis. Isn't it obvious? In the span of the month, the Big Ten went from the public image they were starting to build of a conference that was on par and a threat to the top of college football by making more money from their TV contracts than the SEC and winning the last two national championships. And they have turned into a complete and total joke of a conference with everybody angry at them and nobody listening to what they're campaigning for. They spent a whole week campaigning for the 4-4-2 playoff model and a whole week campaigning for the SEC to play nine conference games and nobody heard it and nobody cares. Guess what? In that other conference, which is what they kept saying at Big Ten Media Days this week. You didn't know that because you weren't keeping up with it because nobody was paying attention to the Big Ten. But in that other conference, it really does just mean more. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Plus, coming up next, I do not make the kind of money that these TV executives, who I guess they've spent their whole life in television, I mean, corporate America, Wall Street's involved. They got to wear a suit and tie to work every day. They have probably private drivers. And I think they're morons. We'll get to that next. Somebody company 1025-106 for the game.
Look, I think the play-in weekend, like I'm only going to speak for the Big Ten, but you send some teams out there do-or-die games knowing that they have to win to make sure they're safe. Like, there could be some really great matchups around our championship game. That's a great weekend for college football. Like, the best way to market the sport is to play more good games.
That's exactly
you can talk about
right.
All the advertising campaigns you want. You can talk about all the slogans and all the promotion and everybody talking. But at the end of the day, what fans really care about is, like, put more good games in front of them, and they'll definitely watch.
That was Tony Petitti, the Big Ten commissioner. And I got to say, I think this 4-4-2-2 thing is so stupid. I'm glad that everyone sniffed it out for how stupid it is. Again, we want the play-in games, right, so we can give NBC and CBS something because the games we give them stink. But this is what you would have gotten. Third-seeded Indiana would have played sixth-seeded Iowa. Fourth-seeded Ohio State would have played fifth-seeded Illinois. Boy, that's a good one right there. Ohio State, Illinois. Connor, get the boys. We're going out to wherever the hell they'd play that game. We're going to camp out. Hopefully we can get tickets to the Ohio State, Illinois play-in game. No, the Indiana-Iowa play-in game.
Oh, 3-0 final score.
I was going to say they might score a touchdown. Boy, that's what we really want. So I have to get this off my chest. I know that it's training camp, and I'm sure a lot of people have tuned in to listen to me bitch about the Titans, and I understand that. And I'll get back to the Titans here in just a second. But there's something I do not understand. These people that make these huge decisions. Let's use Tony Petitti as an example. The commissioner of the Big Ten. My guess is he goes to work every day. He wears a suit and a tie. He's got a secretary. He's probably got his own legal counsel on staff. He's got his own comms guy, probably has a personal driver. How many private planes do you think Tony Petitti flies on in a given year? 100? Same with the guys that run CBS, and the same with the guys that run NBC. Again, I think I'm doing pretty well for myself, but I'm not flying private everywhere I go. I wear a suit like 5 times a year. And I certainly don't have a private driver. And yet, I think it's fair to say that some of these executives might be some of the stupidest people in all of television. For instance, in 2020, CBS passed on what ABC ended up paying the SEC $300 million a year to broadcast the SEC Game of the Week. So remember the old Gary Danielson, Vern Lundquist game, Brad Nessler later, but Alabama versus LSU and the kick six with Auburn. And again, you know it, big matchup. It's on CBS. Saban versus Joe Burrow. That was $300 million. They said, no, we're okay. ABC bought it up. CBS now pays $350 million for the second and third Big Ten game of the week. So instead of Alabama-LSU, instead of Alabama-Auburn in the Iron Bowl, instead of Florida-Georgia every year, instead of every meaningful LSU game when they're really, really good, instead of getting games that feature, now I know Texas wasn't in the league at that point, but a big Texas versus Georgia game. CBS this year has Nevada at Penn State week one, Oklahoma State at Oregon week two, USC at Purdue week three, Michigan at Nebraska week four, and later in the year they get Iowa at Nebraska. I'm sorry, but those games suck. And NBC, for the exact same amount of money, gets virtually the same slate. And not only that, but when NBC signed their deal with the Big Ten, they were under the impression that meant, hey, we're going to get Ohio State, we're going to get Michigan, we're going to get Penn State, we're going to get Oregon, we're going to get USC. And then they said, yeah, actually, Ohio State doesn't play at night, Penn State doesn't play at night, Michigan doesn't play at night. They don't play at night. Says who? Yeah, that's kind of the tradition, and they're not willing to do it. Maybe if they go on the road to Oregon, they'll play at night, but they're not really interested. Like, the idea of getting the horseshoe filled up for a night, yeah, nah, they're not going to do that. That's a terrible television contract. That is terrible. That is horrible business. You just gave up Alabama versus Texas. You just gave up LSU versus Georgia. You just gave up Tennessee versus Florida. You just gave up all these great games every year to get Michigan at Nebraska. Meanwhile, there's news that came out this week, again, from Wall Street, because that's where some of these decisions are made, that NBC is thinking of starting a TV sports network. Gee, when was the last time they had one of those? They're thinking of starting a TV sports network. Remember, they shut down NBCSN in like 2021 when they lost the NHL deal. They're thinking of starting a TV network for all the NBA games that they bought up because they bought them for Peacock. Because apparently NBC thought they could pay $2.45 billion a year, put a bunch of games on Peacock, and that people would say, well, I guess I got to buy Peacock now to stream regular season NBA games. Whoever thought that is a moron and should be fired. I kept saying last year, when all the drama was going down and ESPN was going to re-up with the NBA and TNT was suing the NBA because they were getting more money from NBC and Amazon. And I'm like, how? How is the NBA getting all this money? They're losing all these viewers. What's going on here? And there was an article at Awful Announcing that said NBC already has buyer's remorse over their NBA deal. It hasn't even started yet. I mean, are these people that run these now, are they stupid? Like, why do they have private drivers? Like, why are they flying charter flights? I can tell you right now, I can sit there in a meeting and I can tell you, all right, if we don't pay $300 million for the SEC game of the week, what's our backup option? Well, our backup option is to pay $350 million for the second Big Ten game every week. Okay. What does the second Big Ten game look like on a weekly basis? It looks like Iowa at Nebraska. Yeah, we'll pay the $300 million. I mean, I don't understand how you couldn't keep the Pac-12 alive. How they just say, hey, USC, UCLA, you guys stay put, and we'll pay the $350 million, and you guys can keep most of it. We'll pay the $350 million to put the best Pac-12 game on, because the best Pac-12 game is absolutely going to be better than the second best Big Ten game. And some weeks, we get the third best Big Ten game. How do these people make all this money? I think this is like when we see moron coaches and moron GMs in the NFL. It's like, wow, this guy is at the top, and he's an idiot. I need to know who it was at CBS and NBC pulled the trigger on those Big Ten TV contracts. Because I need to take advantage of those people, too. Like, I need to figure out who is negotiating NBC's TV deals. Because I need to take advantage of them. I will give you the Jared Stillman show. I'll do 4 hours a day. We'll put it on your new TV network. And I'd like $50 million a year. I think they get more bang for their buck for me for $50 million than they will for Iowa and Nebraska for $350 million. Regular season NBA games for $2.45 billion. I think you'll get more out of Jared Stillman at $50 million bucks than you will out of those deals. Who are these doofuses that are making these decisions? I don't know. Or why don't I have those jobs? I mean, again, everybody thinks they can do my job, and I know most people can't. They just sit here and talk to yourself for 4 hours a day about the same thing over and over again. I know it sounds like you can do it. Well, I host a podcast. We tape 18 minutes three times a week. I know that a lot of people think they can do everybody else's job. I didn't, when Lindsay gave birth, my son was born, I didn't walk in there and say, hey, I can deliver the baby. So I'm not one of these people that thinks I can do every job. I can run CBS's sports department better than CBS can. I can tell you that right now. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Joe and Paul co-signed today on something that I so completely and totally disagree with and I think is totally unfair. And in fact, I guess you could say it's unfair. It might be too fair. I don't know the right way to say this, but we'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 106 through the game.
I guess I need to understand why fans are literally tacking every single thing onto Callahan after one season, being exposed to him for one season. If it is a competency thing, fine. But you need to tell me. You need to tell me. Give me the story. Give me the anecdote that shows he has no idea what he's doing. Because I got that with Nathaniel Hackett after 1 year. Do you have that with Bill Callahan? Like,
Brian,
have not heard.
Brian, not Bill, but Bill's here too.
I'm sorry. Brian, okay. Yeah, Brian. Yeah, Brian Callahan. I have not heard that after 1 year about him. Have you? Like, I'm asking you guys. You're there. You're around it all the time. Is there this anecdote that he just absolutely has no idea what he's doing?
No.
Okay.
He's got he had a bad roster the same way Vrabel had a bad roster his last couple of years, which was his unfortunate undoing.
I was taking my pug to daycare this morning, and as I heard Paul Kaharsky utter that, I literally said, my jaw dropped, and I said, what? What? Now, let me get over the first part here. Yes, the Titans roster was a bad roster. They did not have a right tackle last year, although Brian Callahan, I think, is a little culpable for that. You know, I told him the day he took the job, the right tackle story. I'm like, hey, you probably need a right tackle. And then at the combine, he's like, I think Nicholas Petit-Ferrer and Jalen Duncan, I think they can do it. And I'm like, wow, man, you must think you're a great coach. Like, you must think you are freaking the Gipper. You must think you're Vince Lombardi because you think you can coach Jalen Duncan into a starting right tackle. Good for you. But I could not disagree more with what PK said there. I disagree with the fact where, again, Charles Robinson is like, you know, can you think of anything that Brian Callahan did that made it look like he was in over his skis? And Paul and Joe are like, no. But when Paul's like, no, it's a bad roster. The same thing that did in Vrabel is the same thing that did in Callahan. I could not believe it. Yes, the roster's bad. But Callahan's problem might be that he's not a good coach in any regard. When you say something like what Paul just said, you know, again, I think that he's just simplifying it, saying like, he's not as incompetent as Rand Carthon was, where it's clear he had no clue what he was doing, but it's really a bad roster. To me, you're absolving Callahan and you're absolving Vrabel of complete and total blame. Let's use Vrabel as the example here. Because I know, Callahan's your coach right now, so people get a rod up their ass when it comes to Callahan, so let's move him off to the side for a second. I think we understand Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel is a good head coach, and Mike Vrabel is going to win some games, I think, in New England. Now, that is not the team that I would have put him with. I would not have put him with a young quarterback. I probably would have put him in Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence. Dallas, now Jerry would never do that, but Dallas, that would have been the perfect fit for Vrabel. A young quarterback, I'm not so sure of. Because we know Vrabel's problems. Vrabel's voice runs thin after a while. You know, you can only be chief a-hole for so long. Then it eventually runs out. Vrabel is not good at putting a coaching staff together. I think we can all agree on that. Vrabel is disrespectful to the owner. It's not just disrespectful to the media. Joe and Diana Russini wrote a piece about it when Vrabel got fired. Then after those New England comments, Amy was waiting for Vrabel to call her to say, hey, I wasn't meaning any of that. And Vrabel didn't feel like he needed to do it. Felt like assuring the owner that he wasn't taking a crack at her was beneath him. I've seen the downfall with Vrabel. And I think the downfall with Vrabel, as I told the people in Boston, they don't want to believe it, but I told them, I said, the things that he does well, he's smart, he's a hard worker, he's organized, he'll sleep in the office. It's just like Bill Belichick. The problems with Vrabel, they're the same as Bill Belichick. He thinks he's smarter than everybody else and thinks he can be a total a-hole because he's so great. And everybody's lucky to be around him, including the owner. Whereas, again, was Belichick in his prime before he lost his fastball? Was he probably a good coach? Yeah, he probably was a good coach. Was he this unbelievable super genius that was so diabolical that, no, he had Tom Brady, who fell into his lap with the 199th pick. Just like Vrabel, he's a good coach, he worked hard, he lucked into Arthur Smith, whom he only hired because Matt LaFleur was trying to take him to Green Bay, Ryan Tannehill, who they traded for to be a backup, and Derrick Henry, who they spent three-fourths of the year of that first year Vrabel was the coach, on the bench. So we know the pros and the cons with Vrabel. He's smart. He reads the rule book in and out. He's dedicated. He pushes people. He holds them accountable. But we also know with Vrabel there are some problems. Craig Aukerman, anybody? Well, we were third in the league in net punting. Oh, yeah, I'm sure you were. To just dismiss what happened to Vrabel and to just dismiss what happened to Callahan last year as, well, it was a bad roster, I think is completely unfair. And it's unfair not to the coach. I think it's more than fair to the coach. I think it's unfair to reality, to the truth. Again, I'm not exactly sure what Brian Callahan even does well. What did you think of Brian Callahan's coaching staff last year? Again, I know we can complain about the roster, and you can blame Will Levis, whom he inherited, but he said was a big reason that he took the job. I know we can blame that all on somebody else. But whose fault was it that they got a punt block the first 2 weeks of the season? Did they not have the players on the roster to be able to protect the punter? Whose fault was it? Did they allow Khalif Raymond to go crazy returning punts in Detroit? Oh, it was the same guy that let the punts get blocked the first 2 weeks and they did nothing about it. Again, they lost a game at home that they were never competitive in which Malik Willis played quarterback for the other team. And you're going to tell me that it was a bad roster? And that was it? Give me a break. Even for Paul, I remember when Brian Callahan put this coaching staff together. And I'll say this about assistant coaches. I don't know anything about assistant coaches for the most part. I give them the benefit of the doubt, again, for the most part. And then if they look like they don't know what they're doing, then they probably stink. But Frank Bush and Tracy Rocker had been on the Titans coaching staff in the past. And when they got hired, Paul said, can't he do a little bit better than Frank Bush? No, 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 these coaches are great. So Paul already knew going into last year that Frank Bush wasn't a very good coach. And yet, here he is today, just saying, no, 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 it was a bad roster. I mean, they had a bad roster. And Barry Switzer winning a Super Bowl with the Dallas Cowboys, I think is proof that if you have the right players, if you have Aikman and Emmett and Irvin and Russell Maryland and that Cowboy offensive line, if you've got those kind of players, you can win. I mean, bad coaches. Ken Whisenhunt got to a Super Bowl as the coach of the Arizona Cardinals. It's possible. But to just look at last year's team and to say, oh, bad roster, I think is totally, totally ridiculous. And not only that, it's like I said to Corey Curtis earlier today. He said, Vince Lombardi wouldn't have won the Super Bowl with that team last year. I don't disagree. That team sucked. That team had no right tackle. But would Vince Lombardi have won three games? Would Vince Lombardi have looked at the roster and said, my dad can coach up PT? Or would Vince Lombardi have said, we probably need a right tackle? And that doesn't mean that Callahan can't learn from his mistakes last year and be a better coach this year. Totally possible. But when I heard that with like, hey, are there any stories of Callahan where it looks like he's in over his head? Instead of saying, yeah, week three against Green Bay last year, it was fourth and short. Callahan sent the punt team on. The fans booed. Callahan called timeout, went for it on fourth down, didn't get it. Yeah. The first day of pads last year, Jeffrey Simmons threw a punch, and Brian Callahan didn't do anything about it. Nope, we just said, oh, no, it was the roster. And I think it's crazy. I think it's crazy. And I think Joe and Paul are better than that. Like, I think they're critical people. I think that they are thorough and thoughtful analysts. I think they're better than that. And I just think that that idea of, oh, no, it's just a bad roster, that is awful. Terrible. 615-737-1025 here on the program. 615-737-1025. There is a Vrabel story. If you want to get to that, I'm going to let you choose. You want a Vrabel story? Or do you want my advice for Brian Callahan? The one thing, because again, people are like, Jared, you're just negative. Here's what Brian Callahan should absolutely, positively do. And if he's listening and does it, nobody will give me credit for it because I never get credit for anything. So do you want to hear that or do you want to hear the Vrabel story? Well, you'll choose next. Stillman & Company, 1025 The Game.
Mike, you called the 5 weeks over the summer, I think, you know, one of the most important parts, the most important part of the offseason, just now the guys are back. I know there's 90 of them, but generally speaking.
91.
91, excuse me, international pathway. How'd they do? How do you feel about how the guys came back?
I mean, whether you were in a coma when I answered Tom's question or typing on your phone or tweeting, I don't know, but I spent 5 minutes answering that question. And I can go back through it, but I'd rather not. We won't know. We did pretty good on the linear run test, which they practiced. They know what it was going to be. The big thing will come when they're in line contact. I mean, and you're sitting there, you're wrestling with a guy, and then the D lineman's rushing. He almost gets to the quarterback, but we're telling him to plant and run and go sprint to the football and then go do it again. Or we're asking Kyle Williams to go run a post, and he didn't get the ball, but he wanted to get the ball, but he didn't. Can he run back, get set, know what to do the next play? That's really where we'll see. So I'll be able to answer that question again, hopefully only once in a few days.
Your answer better than.
They are lapping it up. I mean, they just love it. And you know what? Hey, who am I to rain on their parade? But I was listening to Boston Radio. They were talking about Vrabel first day of practice. And everything when it comes to Vrabel is just like, you know, Vrabel is no nonsense. And Vrabel, you know, is putting the players first. And Vrabel is setting the tone. And Vrabel is telling Vin Foligno, you know, holding him accountable. And Vrabel, he's just a leader. He's just so much better than Rob Mayo. Vrabel, he's just. And then I hear Greg Bedard. If you remember Greg Bedard, he's the one that put out that story. A lot of people think it probably came from Vrabel. He's the one that put out that rumor that the NFL made the Titans hire Rand Carthon as a minority. Again, I don't know if it's true. I had him on the show, asked him about it. His explanation was very, very bad. But again, I was listening to him. And he was talking about the first day of practice and about the fact that Will Campbell, the left tackle, got beat for a sack. Morgan Moses, the right tackle, got beat for two sacks. Morgan Moses got taken out. They put in one of his replacements. He gave up a sack. The offensive line was bad in pass protection. the first day of training camp. Now, again, everybody always tells you when it's the opening day, oh, it's just the first day. Here was the headline. Patriots camp report. Pass protection starts off slow and drill heavy opening day. Not much to be gleaned from that practice. Offense in the second practice worked on quick game and screens. Blah, 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 blah. Pass protection wasn't very good. Boy. Where have I heard that before from Mike Vrabel? It took everything in me not to say, well, I bet Jason Hodling, who's on the coaching staff, I bet he'll fix it. I mean, between him and Todd Downing, who is their wide receivers coach, I mean, you've got a bunch of geniuses on the Vrabel coaching staff. And this is what I am so excited to see. And maybe I'll be wrong about this. Maybe Mike Vrabel will learn from his mistakes and he will hire better coaches, and Downing as a receivers coach instead of a coordinator, he'll be better. And because he's got McDaniels there, it'll be a buffer. You know, they got a real coach calling the plays. They have a real offensive line coach in Doug Marrone. You know, even though Hodling's there and he's a total bozo, maybe it'll work out for him. I don't know. But I am just ready for the first time the Patriots lose one of those Vrabel special games and Vrabel gets ants up his craw for the media questioning something like when the Titans media questioned the trainers after all the injuries, or like when the Titans media questioned in 2020 when they had something like 180 minus expected points on defense. And everyone kept saying, who's calling the plays on defense? And Vrabel every time, I don't want to talk about that. Who cares who called the play? No matter. I mean, if they could flip on Belichick after he won 6 Super Bowls, you think the leash is going to be very long for Mike Vrabel? So I'm ready for it. Again, they're lapping it up. They love it right now. They are just, oh, they're like, yes, Vrabel. Yes, and I know some of you can't enjoy this because you're too upset about the fact that your team fired Vrabel when I'm telling you it was obvious Vrabel needed to go. Even TD said it after the fact. I asked him, I said, TD, do you think it was the right decision to move on from Vrabel? And TD said, look, voices get tired. It's kind of funny to me that Harold Landry was the one last year who was up there saying, you know, guys can be themselves this year. And now Harold Landry is playing for Vrabel. But I hear them talk about things like, well, you know, Harold Landry, he's going to go in there and make a difference. I'm like, uh-huh, sure. So lap it up now. Vrabel gets on a reporter. I mean, hey, it's funny. I remember when Vrabel was getting on my ass. And I was thinking to myself, oh, my God, this is so good for the radio show. But at the end of the day, Vrabel's going to run into the same problems he ran in here. And that is that Vrabel thinks his poop doesn't smell. And there are just certain towns where they let you get away with more. Don't want to call anybody out, but Nashville is one of those towns. Boston is not. And I know Vrabel, he ain't going to change. So if he put Todd Downing on his coaching staff, that tells you all you need to know, in my opinion, about Mike Vrabel and the Patriots and what's going to happen up there. And not only that, for some reason they spent a bunch of money in free agency. I'm not even sure the players they got are really all that good. Yes, Harold Landry is not that good anymore. Stephon Diggs, he's older. Everyone keeps getting rid of him. But hey, maybe Diggs is good. They had no receivers last year. But I mean, people think they're going to win 9 games. People think this team may go to the playoffs. I don't see 9 wins. Not with Todd Downing on the coaching staff. Not unless Jason Hodling's figured something out. And by the sounds of what went down on the first day of practice, doesn't sound like he has. 615-737-1025. Chad Withrow joins us next on the program. His thoughts on what we're hearing after the first week of Titans practice. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106 for the game.